cannabis topics in less than 10 minutes. Let's go.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of The Dime. I'm Brian Fields, and with me, as always, is Kellen Finney. And this week, we've got a very special guest, Paul F. Austin, entrepreneur, author, and coach. Paul, thanks for taking the time. How are you doing today?
Hey, Brian. Good to be here. I'm in Truckee, a little ski town outside of Tahoe. And I'm stoked to talk about microdosing and psychedelics and anything else that you want to go into. So I'm looking forward.
The first thing I wanted to bring up and get your opinion on is this quote that I have on your website. Plenty of CEOs who do not talk publicly about their psychedelic use because it would put their entire career at risk. I think that's such a powerful statement, but I before we get into that, I want to understand, why do they take it? And then why do you think it would put their careers at risk?
You want the long answer or
The long answer.
You want the long answer. All right. So I'll give you, so historical context is when I first got into going like deep down the rabbit hole, right, when I was like, this could be a brand that I start, I'm interested in sort of an entrepreneurial path. I'm a voracious reader. So I read like 20, 25 books, right? And I read a lot of history books because I thought, oh, what happened in the 60s and 70s when there was 1,000 clinical papers published is important. What happened in ancient times is important. So I just read and read and read. And one of the things that I came to understand is that drug use is normal. It's a normal evolutionary impulse for us as human beings. We literally have to alter our consciousness in some way. And those who don't actually suffer more than those who do. And the most common drugs that we use to alter our consciousness are tobacco, caffeine, and alcohol, right? And you can track the development of, the use of these three drugs with the development of industrialism. So we didn't start actively using these three drugs a lot until like the 17th century, and use grew and grew over time. Because these drugs helped to support the industrial mindset, which was stimulation during the day to get things done, because there were a lot of things that needed to get done. And then destimulation in the evening with alcohol to help unwind and relax and sort of repeat, rinse and repeat. Cannabis was the first drug that was basically legalized. And I know there was a use of cannabis in the 19th century and whatnot, but I'm thinking more in modern times. So the first drug that was really legalized that was outside of those three core ones. And that has created this sort of bridge for psychedelics to be more widely used. And why does that matter? Because in industrialism, a lot of the activities that brought value were related to what we call convergent thinking, meaning you know what needs to get done, you just need the energy and the time to get it done, right? This is how the vast majority of our economy was built and developed. There were a few people at the top who made the decisions, right? But the vast majority of the people were just there to execute and make sure things got done. That's shifting now, especially with artificial intelligence, with automation, with this sort of information era and age that we're in, where AI will really focus on doing a lot of that convergent thinking, if you will. We'll tell AI what we need to get done and it'll get it done, like ChatGPT does for writing. And this is very basic so far. We'll see way more development in the next 10 years. And so what that means is the role of a human being when it comes to vocation and work will be much more focused on creativity, problem solving, high level thinking, where as we enter a more uncertain landscape and it's really not clear what to do, those in leadership positions need to be able to problem solve in a space where there's a lot of unknowns and uncertainties. And psychedelics, I think, more than a drug, more than cannabis, more than obviously alcohol, more than caffeine and tobacco, help with that process of stepping back, looking at things from a broader lens and going, what might be a reasonably logical solution based on the context that we're seeing? And this sort of hypothesis is rooted in a research study that was done in 1966.
Are there certain groups of people, given everyone you've experienced this with or seen go through the retreats, that benefit from an age perspective or a time of their life? Is there any sort of window of people that you think that are considering that are more beneficial? And in the same regard, is there a window of people you think they think it's the right time for them, but given what's going on, it's likely not the best time?
So I'll start with the second one, just because it's a little bit simpler. So the main contraindication for psychedelic use is schizophrenia. So if someone has schizophrenia or a family history of schizophrenia, and they're under the age of 26, they have a family history of schizophrenia, that's important to emphasize. They should not do or work with psychedelics, probably shouldn't work with cannabis either. They need to be very careful and cautious about how they navigate these things. I would also say someone who's on lithium, which usually people who have schizophrenia or struggle with it, they may be on lithium. Lithium is really the only contraindication for psilocybin in particular. And then the other context that I would add there is if someone has had a very recent traumatizing experience, like the example that I would give would be like you signed up for a retreat in Mexico, you're planning to go, and then a week before it happens, your dad dies. And you were really close with your dad, right? Like maybe better to pause and sort of push that psychedelic retreat out until you feel a bit more stable internally to go in that. So I would say those are like the two main contexts and cautions: schizophrenia and then a recent traumatic experience that may cause a certain level of instability before you actually go into a high dose experience. I would say those who would benefit most from working with psychedelics, and this may be controversial, but I'll say it anyway, would be very young adults. So adults who are 16, 17, 18, 19, almost as a rite of passage to be done in a intentional way, like a men's circle or with a parent or with a community. Right. So a rite of passage, I think, can be an incredibly beneficial thing at a young age because it helps to sort of reset the orientation of that individual. That's, again, when I go, wow, I'm so grateful for this is, you know, when I was working with LSD at the age of 19, these were very positive, insightful and beneficial experiences that completely changed the trajectory of my life. And so I think if we have more young adults who are able to experience this in a very beautiful way, the work they choose to pursue will be different. The relationships they choose to pursue will be different. Their sort of overall capacity to navigate the challenges and uncertainties of you know, your 20s will be different. So I think it could be really important at a younger age.
Sorry to cut you off. That initiation. Any fear that could go in the wrong direction. I know for you, you had a good experience, but any fear given the age that you just talked about, they could go in the opposite direction.
Great question. So with that being the case, I would refer back to what I said before. There needs to be a clear understanding of family history as it relates to mental health and as it relates to psychosis in particular. There also needs to be probably a lower dose that's done initially, like sort of a stepping up. So you can get a sense of, oh, this is how they respond to a microdose of psilocybin. This is how they respond to a half gram. This is how they respond to a gram. So I think there's ways to mitigate that. But certainly it's more risky than someone who's in their 50s or 60s, right? Because there's a lot of unknowns. And that was always the case with initiation. Some people didn't make it back, not from psychedelic, but most initiations in indigenous communities were very physically dangerous. And so psychedelics almost reproduce or recreate that near-death experience without the risk of physical danger. So I think by far they're the safest way to have a rite of passage or initiation for those who are quite young. And there needs to be, like I said, quite a bit of support done on the front end, assessment done on the front end to ensure it's a great fit. I would say the other people that would benefit most would be people in their 50s and 60s who have been stuck in their same ways for a very long time and were looking to sort of shake up the snow globe, if you will.
I love it. Paul, we only have time for one more question. So I take you to the mountains, I drop you off, I give you 200 micrograms of LSD, and you can bring three people, dead or alive. Who are you bringing?
Number one would be this guy named Stuart Brand. So Stuart is like an OG in Silicon Valley tech psychedelic culture. He was part of the Merry Pranksters, Ken Kesey's Merry Pranksters in the 60s. He did LSD with Jim Fadiman back in the day, the psychologist that I mentioned before. Stuart started these things called the acid test, which were with the Grateful Dead. And there's so much more. He started the Whole Earth Catalog. The second person would probably be Leonardo da Vinci. And then the third person would be Aldous Huxley. Aldous Huxley is probably my favorite author.
I love it. So for our listeners, they want to get in touch. They want to learn more. Where can they find you?
TheThirdWave.co. We have a newsletter. We have a private community that's free to join, which I would encourage people to sign up for, introduce yourselves, or to meet other people who are interested in the space. That's community.thethirdwave.co. If there are any coaches, practitioners, those who want to become coaches or practitioners in the space, we have a training program through the Psychedelic Coaching Institute. You can find that on The Third Wave as well. And then I'm on Instagram and Twitter at PaulAustin3W. And I'm pretty responsive to DMs. So if you heard this show and you want to reach out, you have questions about anything, just hit me up and let me know. And I'm happy to support you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks, brother. This was great.
Thanks. Guys, if you've enjoyed this podcast over the last few years, can you please take 3 minutes or less and leave us a quick review on Apple or Spotify? All reviews make a massive difference for us and help other people like you find this podcast. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hey friends, I'm Brannon.
And I'm Saba.
And we are your host of the Cannabis Hangout Podcast, an educational platform to connect with the cannabis community and share personal stories while breaking the stigma of marijuana.
Join us every Sunday at 7 p.m. to gain valuable insight with different perspectives from industry leaders, growers, and medical marijuana patients.
This is a place to learn so much from different angles in the cannabis industry. So tune in while we break it all down.